Argentina, and he's going to talk about approaches to robust materials estimation based on projection.
Okay, thanks. Well, good morning. I first want to congratulate the organizers for having undertaken this organization of this meeting, and I thank them for the opportunity to come here and join and participate in the meeting. I want to talk about estimators based on projections, so that I don't plan to review all estimates based on projections, but I want just to put emphasis on some of them and on their and the advantages of projections for getting better estimators in different senses. So that, I begin with a historical note, that is the Stiles-Donohoe estimator was the first, it's an estimator obviously based on projections, and it was the first equivariant estimate with a high breakdown for all dimensions. Actually, it has then later Tyler and Gather showed how to make it attain the highest breakdown point for finite samples. It was an important breakthrough, and it, besides, later it was also the first robust estimate for which a subsampling procedure was proposed for the effective computation. And as you all know, it is based on a univariate location statistics mu and a univariate dispersion sigma, such as the median and the mod. And it also a weight function W. And this is, and it is based on an outlyingness measure for each point. We define an outlyingness measure which depends on projecting the data on all directions A, so that we take the location of the projection A transpose X, the dispersion of the projection, and then measure how far is the point, the projected point X is with respect to this projected to this location mu of AX, and then the estimate the vector T of location and the scatter matrix V are a weighted means and covariance, a weighted mean vector and a weighted covariance vectors, with the weights given by the weight function applied to this outlyingness measure. So that you surely know this pretty well. I don't need to explain it further. And now, after this historical note, I want to show how projection estimates may be used for two purposes. One is to get estimators with a good asymptotic bias, and the other is to find estimators, fast estimators for high dimensional data. And this is going to stay here. And so the first let us see about the projections based a family of estimators based on projections. We call P estimates for projections, which are based on the idea that a property of the mean and the variance, that is, if mu is the sample mean and sigma is the standard deviation, and then if T is the mean vector and V is the covariance matrix, then we have these two identities, that is the mean along each direction is of the center data is zero, and the dispersion, the variance along each direction is given by a quadratic form corresponding to the covariance matrix. Now, the natural idea is that now we replace mu and sigma by robust statistics. Of course, if we could find a vector T, say for mu equal to the median and sigma the mod, if we could find T and V satisfying these two identities, we would have wonderful robust substitutes for the means and covariances. But of course, we can never get this. So that these projection-based estimators try to attain, to approximate this as best as possible. So the scatter matrix, which was appeared in was by in a paper by Stahl, Yohai, and myself, compares the two sides of this equation, the robust sigma and the quadratic form, takes their ratio and seeks that this ratio does not become too large nor too small. That's why we take the log and then the absolute value. And then we take the worst case, that is, we search over all directions A and try to minimize this measure of, say, of nonce of this discrepancy between these those two sides. And the location vector, the T defined by Tyler, does something similar. Tries to make this equation too small. But to make it small, one has to compare it to something. It is compared to a scale sigma, and so we do this for all the projections A, and try to make it as small as possible, in the sense that we take the worst case for all directions, and then we minimize this measure. Now comparing this equation 5 with this outlying measure, it is seen that the Tyler estimator can be described as minimizing the Stahl-Donohoe outlying measure. No, there is a relationship between both. And then there are this location estimate has been studied by Adrover and Yohai, who called it MP estimate. It's easy to prove that these estimates are equivariant and they attain the maximum breakdown point for equivariant estimates. Now we have to study the asymptotic bias of this estimate, and so I repeat some concepts that you already know. The problem that we shall immediately see is that the breakdown, having a high breakdown point, is not enough, because it is a very... I think that now we can, in this third millennium, we can agree that the breakdown point is not enough to measure the performance of an estimate, and so we have to look closer and look at the asymptotic bias. That is, not only see if it is a finite or infinite, but how large it is. So we have a central distribution F0. We consider contamination neighborhoods of F0, and then we have to measure the performance of the estimates to know what we are estimating. We reduce to consider the case of an elliptical distribution F0, and since all the estimates considered now in this part are equivariant, we finally take a spherical distribution F0, and so that now we are in the spherical case. In the spherical case, we know what we have to estimate, that is, the vector should be zero, and the matrix should be a constant multiple of the identity matrix. So that's... And so the bias of the location estimate is simply the norm of T, and we can define the different measures of error for the matrix. But since we are, we consider it more important to study shape, we just take a measure of non-sphericity, for example, the condition number of V, although there are other possible measures. And then we took pessimistic point of view of taking as a criterion the maximum bias over all distributions in the neighborhood. Well, these are the definitions which you already surely know, and now some results on this setting. Then Adroben and Yohai calculated the maximum asymptotic bias of the location estimates, of the MP estimate. And they found there a result that, in the sense that that it is has an asymptotic bias which is close to the best possible, in the following sense: they find a lower bound for the maximum asymptotic bias for all equivariant estimates, and then the MP estimates has a maximum bias which is about twice this lower bound, which is not bad, at least for a small contamination epsilon. And then the other interesting result is that for a spherical distribution, the maximum bias depends only on the marginals. That is, in particular for the normal, the maximum bias does not depend on dimension, which is very peculiar, because for this is not the case for any other estimate which we know. Also, for the scatter matrix, we had computed the maximum asymptotic bias for the Stahl-Donohoe estimate, and in the paper where we define the scatter P estimate, we also calculate the maximum asymptotic bias of the scatter matrix of the V, using the MAT as a scale sigma. And also in this case, the maximum bias is not dependent on the dimension. This is fixed. And now some numbers. So these are the maximum asymptotic bias for point contamination, for point mass contaminations, because they had to be computed numerically, and it would have been too hard to do this for a more general contamination. So we have the two cases, dimensions. We have two, contamination 10% and 20%. And now we see some characteristics. The Stahl-Donohoe estimate has a bias which increases with dimension. While the minimum volume ellipsoid has a bias which for scatter, which decreases with dimension. So that actually they should meet somewhere, but I regret that we have not computed it for larger dimensions. Then the P estimate has a constant bias, that independent of dimension, and lower, much lower than the other estimates. Then for location, we have the same phenomenon. The Stahl-Donohoe estimate has an increasing bias. The P estimate has a constant bias, and the MCD has a very rapidly increasing bias with dimension. These numbers are really very, very impressive, I find. And if someone does not believe, then it can be checked. Say if one does a simulation, one gets similar phenomenon. And so after listening to David Rock's talk on Monday, I thought perhaps this could explain part of the practical of this practical breakdown problem. I mean, it may be that the phenomenon that David found, apart from the problems of the numerical computation, had to do with finding the configurations that were causing the largest asymptotic bias, and this bias is so big that one can, although the estimate is bounded, actually for practical purposes it is really a practical breakdown. But now a practical breakdown of the exact estimate, of the asymptotic exact estimate, so the purest world we still have a kind of practical breakdown. This is an outcome of this study. And so the conclusion of this part is that these projection estimates have a very good bias, and it would be very nice to if they could be easily computed, which is something that we have to see, we shall see later. But these are the results for the first purpose I mentioned about projection-based estimators. And now I go to turn to another issue, which is the how to use projection for finding fast estimates. So when, again, I repeat a number of facts you already know, that robust estimates, high breakdown point estimates, require some kind of stochastic computing. We have generated to generate subsamples to get candidate solutions, and the number of subsamples have to increase with the dimension in order to attain a kind of stochastic breakdown point, which includes, in particular, the Stahel-Donohoe estimate. About the P estimates of location, well, they can be computed. They are no more expensive than the Stahel-Donohoe estimate, because the vector T is the vector minimizing the outlieness measures, so that one could approximate it or replace it by the data point minimizing the outlieness measure, and this gives an approximation to this to the location P estimate. Instead, the scatter matrix is more complicated because we need two things. Each subsample has to be used to generate a candidate matrix and one or more projecting directions. And so the computational load is much heavier, and we have been able to reduce it, but there is some tricks one can use, but nevertheless it is still much slower than the other estimators, such as the SDE. So that this poses perhaps a candidate problem for the workshop. There is the recent development by Rousseau and Van Driessen of the fast MCD estimate, which is a real breakthrough because they can obtain really very effective computations which are requiring a surprisingly low number of subsamples. But this has been a real breakthrough, making it possible to compute things in very, very high dimensions. However, I think, well, what happens, well, still for P, say, some 100 or 200, still we would need faster estimates. And so there are I want to speak of two recent estimates which are not based on subsampling, but they are based on projections. One is a type of estimates based on the giving up equivariance, giving up some equivariance. You know that, of course, we can always estimate location coordinate wise, and we can estimate covariance pair wise. It is very simple, very fast. We apply a robust location and a robust covariance to each variable, to each pair of variables, and it is okay. And it's easy to compute, but they are not. They have too many drawbacks. They are not equivariant. Well, that is perhaps not too bad. The matrix is not necessarily positive semi-definite. And besides, under high collinearity, they are not very robust, and they are not very efficient. They have the worst. If there is no contamination, they are very inefficient. And if there is contamination, actually they may be not be very robust, contrary to intuition. So that we must improve on this. And so recall the estimate, the fine by Anadesic and Kettenring, which was, I lost my transparency, which was based in an equation which was in one transparency, which now perhaps has, no, I found it. Okay. We turn again to this property, the relationship between univariate variances and the covariance matrix. The Granadesic and Kettenring estimate is based on this well-known identity. We can get covariances from variances, and so they propose to define a robust covariance matrix by taking the covariances pairwise with using a robust sigma. Again, we have the symmetric covariance matrix, but not, it is not a fine equivariant and not positive definite. There is a paper by Genton and Ma who calculated its influence function and the asymptotic efficiency. And now I wanted to stress that this is a kind of poor man's projection estimate, a poor man's pre-estimate, because actually it is like trying to force this property, but only in a small number of directions. And so we have developed with Samar a modification of this estimate, a simple modification, which yields a positive semi-definite matrix, and which is also in some sense approximately equivariant. Since I spoke about this less than 1 year ago, and you all were, most of you were there, I shall not repeat the details. I shall only give, say, a poetic description of the estimate, because, you can also always see the details afterward. So the main idea is that we compute a covariance matrix based on the style of the Granadesic and Kettenring method, and then we replace the eigenvalues of the matrix by the robust variances along the directions given by the eigenvectors. That is a kind of robust principal components. We force the principal components to be positive. This is the main idea. Then it requires a lot of cooking, but then I have found by painful experience that a good idea that is not enough. If one doesn't care about the details, the good idea may be turned to nothing. There's a number of details which require being taken care of, but it is the main idea. Then we express the data on the coordinate systems of the eigenvectors. There we compute the location coordinate wise. And then this can be iterated. We can do this, repeat the procedure now on this new coordinate system. Since the estimator is not equivariant, this gives another thing. We can repeat it a number of times, and then we transform back to the original coordinates. This is the main idea. Saying this in formulas is long, but the idea you see is very simple. And finally, we apply the traditional final one-step hard rejection to get rid of very large outliers. And we name this the orthogonalized Granadesic and Kettenring estimate, or GK. The sigma mu must be very well chosen. They must be at the same time robust and efficient. I mean, the median and the mod are not good enough. They must be also efficient. Then it can be shown that the breakdown point of the whole procedure is as good as the breakdown point of sigma and of mu. And I have not written down it. It is easy to show that it is Fisher consistent for elliptic distribution. So that at least in one case we know what it does. It is Fisher consistent for elliptic distributions. And the iterations are not really iterations. They do not converge to anything. And empirically, we found that two repetitions of this procedure give a good estimate. One perhaps is not enough, and three are not necessary. And then there is another type of estimates developed by Peña and Prieto, which is a really quite peculiar idea, because the basis is that the fact that the kurtosis is a measure of unimodality, in a sense. And so for univariate data, a small contamination increases the kurtosis and a large amount of contamination decreases it. And so what they do is to look for directions in which the projections in which the kurtosis is either very large or very small. And so they call it kurtosis 2 because they have some variants, and it's rather complex, but the main idea is that they find two sets of p directions. One are local maxima of the kurtosis along the projections, and the other is the local minima. Then one can use these directions in many ways, for example, in pure style Donohoe, but they do it more complicated. Then they measure outlyingness of each point, such as in the style Donohoe sense, and then they delete transitorily the points which have a high outlyingness. They repeat the former steps on the remaining points, and then they apply a kind of one step hard rejection. And this a combination of steps. Well, this is their method. And now, about comparisons, both of the statistical performance and of the computing performance. Then, at the first place, we cannot do any calculation of the asymptotic biases, neither of the OGK estimator of the Peña Prieto, because it is too complex. This analyzing card getting estimate is simple, but since it is not equivariant, it is very difficult to undertake any calculation, and the Peña Prieto procedure is too complex to do anything. Well, I don't think we can ever attain an asymptotic result. Then there are simulations, of course. We perform some simulations comparing our estimate with the fast MCD and the style Donohoe, and for dimensions, for low dimensions, for about 5 to 10 dimensions, this OGK estimate was better than the fast MCD, but the style Donohoe estimate was overall best. However, when experimenting with real data, and especially for high dimensional data up to 93 dimensions, the style Donohoe estimate was clearly bad. I mean, it failed to discover a structure which was found by the other two estimates. And we don't know if this is really a computing problem or an intrinsic feature. Maybe due to both things, perhaps. Because also the bias increases with dimension. Then there are comparisons of simulation based by Peña and Prieto, but they are different. They also find that their estimate is better than the style Donohoe estimate for a high dimension, and it is better than the fast MCD when the outliers are concentrated. But they are worse in the case when the scatter is similar to that of the good points. That is the case that Roque has pointed out as the worst case. In this most difficult case, it is not so good as the fast MCD. And there are still no direct comparison with our estimate, and I expected them to have some simulations done before I came, but they didn't have. So how much time do you have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. So there are some issues about running times. The The OGK is several hundred times faster than the Steyer-Donoghue estimate for whatever reasonable choice of number of subsamples we have. And for large P, it's about 40 times faster than the fast MCD. We have done this for dimension up to 100. But there are not direct comparisons with the running times of the Kurtosis procedure, which is about 10% of 10 times faster than fast MCD, but we don't have more comparisons up to now. That is, it's a pity that I don't have more recent experiments to report on. So that this is most of what I wanted to say. Since there is some time available, I wanted to show an example with the real data, and it is so. It is a data. Perhaps when you see this transparency, this handwritten transparency, you will understand why school teachers were always angry at me. They said, "You, Marona, you are good at math, but your handwriting is horrible." Well, I don't know if the first is true, but the second is still true. So that this is a data set with a low resolution spectroscopy of the atmosphere. These are 531 spectra with measured 93 points. That is the P93. We computed the different estimates for these data sets. Our estimate, the OGK, took 20 seconds, and the fast MCD 11 minutes. In this sense, they are different. Now, they give similar results as to what they find. To see how to display the results, I have done the QQ plots of the Mahalanobis distance. With respect to the chi-square distribution, if we compare them, I compute the Mahalanobis distances, the xy minus t transpose v minus 1 xy minus t. I order the Mahalanobis distances and compare them to the quantiles of the chi-square distribution. Only that, since the range of the distance is so huge, I shall display them in a square root scale, because otherwise there is almost nothing to be seen. The range is too huge. And now it is, well, so the, let's see, the right panel, it is the corresponding to the OGK with two iterations. Actually, this straight line should be the identity, so only that it has been crushed by the scale of the other points. But actually, this part, you should imagine that it is the identity line. So about half of the data are more or less normal. And then there is a strange jump. A change in the slope, and there are a number of points here. And then there are some completely wild outliers. Then this plot shows banner shows the plot for the fast MCD and for the covariance. I have just shifted the two plots, of course, start at the origin, but I have shifted them so that they can be seen. The covariance mean and covariance matrix don't show almost anything except a few outliers. And the fast MCD shows more or less the same pattern as the OGK estimate. And now, this is strange because could this be an artifact? Because it's strange that an artifact appears in two different estimates. Huh? And so, well. Here again, we have the plots of the fast MCD and the Steyer-Donoghue estimate. Steyer-Donoghue doesn't find almost anything except some big outliers. And now I took the time to look at the 531 spectra. I found the following. There are four, more or less, three or four types of spectra, which are the two above are the typical specimens. There are at least half of the data of the spectra have these forms. Then there is this one of like such like this is a crazy outlier, quite different. This is increasing instead of decreasing. And then there are some intermediate forms. Well, and so what happens is the following. The points, the typical forms are all in these straight lines. This the crazy outlier at the bottom right is here. All these points are the crazy outliers. The points just above the break are the intermediate ones, and the points here are very noisy versions of the typical points. So that this is a rich data set. Of course, it is perhaps it is more adequate to treat it through clustering than through just this type of analysis. But I found it remarkable that a very simple instrument, which because we are really computing means and covariances, a very simple instrument can already give us a hint of the structure of the data set. The example, and so I want to conclude that with the moral that projections are useful for bias and for speed, but unfortunately we cannot get both things at the same time, and so that it would be very nice if somebody could invent a fast p estimate, and we would have the best of both worlds. Okay, thank you.
Yes. State the actual complexity of the p estimator. Like, is it O n squared, where n is the number of observations? O something.
Okay. It is. We can only prove that this it is less than O n squared, but empirically it is n log n. Empirically. Where n is the number of subsamples. Right. Yes.
What about in p? Number of variables.
That is standard because for each sample we have to compute an eigenvalue decomposition. That is the main load, the main cost.
You mentioned that the maximum bias is dimension. This is not possible
to artifact. I don't hear.
Yes. Is this not an artifact of the Gauss error model? There's a very, very small, very, very small neighborhood in a sense. It's smaller than a total deviation neighborhood. It's so small that it can actually mislead you to think it is independent. I suspect if you take a realistic neighborhood, full-top logic
there, you will
not have
an independent. I don't know. The proof for the maximum bias is for point contamination. The independence, your proof of the independence of maximum bias on dimension is for point contamination or for general contamination?
It's for general.
It's a Gauss error model you're using. It's a Gauss error model.
Very, very small neighborhood.
When you think it's smaller than the total variation neighborhood.
Yeah, it's extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that could be misleading.
But in fact, the total variation neighborhood is contained
in a condemnation or of the ranges.
Yeah, so
one cannot say condemnation. Okay, so it's the small way. Well, so you mean that it, that is
a... I don't know, but I mean,
No, no, it's hopeless.
I just want to make another sort of applications comment. I think that the kind of example that Ricardo showed is something we should be doing a lot more of. I've practically given up on any kind of, you know, tail percent points for finding interesting structure. You look at data sets and you find all sorts of structure that are so far out and so different. So I think looking at various things like, I don't know, density estimates, other things besides QQ plots, and using them more on real data sets.
Yes.
You said that the estimated one on the fine equivariant, but the probably are orthogonal equivariants. So you often have the problem that with in the class of a fine equivariant, so because you can't really see optimal rate of bond, but if you only ask for translation of orthogonal equivariant.
No, no, neither. I said they are not orthogonal equivariant either. I made a very vague statement that they are approximately equivariant, and this we have no theorem about that. This means that we have taken data sets, and we have performed a large number of affine transformations and compared the estimate with under the different transformation, and it more or less keeps it doesn't deviate too much. And we have also done our simulations taking this into account in two senses. On one side, we have performed then under very, very, very high collinearity, which is the worst case for our estimate. And we have also done this under random. We have taken random affine transformations, so that we and in all cases the results are more or less the same. And so, in this sense, in an empirical sense, we have approximately equivariant estimates.
Okay. I guess this to be continued.
Okay.
So let us thank again.